Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we are talking about a film that's celebrating its 35-year anniversary, the Big 3-5, The Toxic Avenger Part 2.
Who did this?
So I did this. Okay. I did this. I will take full blame. If it's trauma, it's usually this guy. This was
I have yet to pick a trauma, haven't I?
Yeah, there's a reason.
I'm curious as to which one you might pick if you were to ever pick one, but
probably none. Should we just get right to it?
Because hour and 48 minutes, so I went with Tox Brewing Muscaria.
Dude, okay, so Tox is my cousin is the not my distant cousin is the brewer at Tox. So I can't believe that you're holding that in your hand. That is two towns over from me.
North.
It
Haven.
Is. Yeah. Well, so. So you had you had Timber Ales, and now you have Tox. So 12% is distributing to somebody that you shop with, and it's magnificent. Anyway, sorry.
I really love
Tox.
That's really good.
I am struggling to get this straw open. And that's
like a joint in there, and I was like, that is the longest joint I've ever seen.
No. This is a straw. Which means that it goes into a box of some sort.
Yeah.
I have a box of sake. Lucky Dog sake. Because we're going international. But that's why I was struggling. If you've heard a little crinkle for these first 2 minutes, that's why.
You know
what?
I'm
having a hard time over here.
Son of a bitch. I've been trying to be an adult. So every day.
Don't do it.
I know. It's the worst. But every day I have a checklist of stuff to do. And not to brag too much, but we're recording this at the end of January right now. And I am so ahead on my editing schedule that I'm editing stuff that's the end of February release. So
Whoa.
I've been like limiting myself to just like one edit a day. Like, take it easy. Don't like, because I was doing like 4 to 5 edits a day and like not having any breathing room. So today I had nothing but like lounging time. I just had music on. I was reading a book. What I should have fucking done is I should have grabbed Mr. Kaufman's debut novel where he explains the whole story of the making of this movie instead of just using like the three factoids that are on IMDb and nothing else. Because I remember that there was like a whole story of like Troma got all these Japanese investors that were like, we want you to make films in Japan for Japan. Like, we'll fly you out here. We'll cover. And that's why you got this movie and Sergeant Kabuki Man, like, in kind of quick succession was, like, part of that contract with Japan. Anyway, long story short. But this movie, if you didn't read the factoid, which is insane, is that Toxic Avenger Part 2 and Toxic Avenger Part 3 came out in the same year. Because when Lloyd Kaufman made Toxic Avenger 2, it was a 4.5-hour long movie. Good and his wife no. and his wife was like, yeah, you need to split those into two movies. What confuses me most is that this has such a definitive storyline and ending. Like, how is there a whole second movie worth? And the whole second movie worth is basically just like what happens with the people from Apocalypse Incorporated after this movie. But like,
what?
Yeah, it's like, why did Lloyd think that we needed an hour and a half of Melvin finding his father in Bro, the beginning of this movie?
Dude, I didn't need more than half of this movie.
This movie is an hour and 48 minutes long for the listener. It is crushingly long.
See, and I was going to say, you guys got the better version than I did, because I have the unrated director's cut DVD, mm-hmm. which was released incorrectly and has the R-rated cut on the disc. So I got none of the gore, like none of it.
Which is so funny that the director's cut is the gore-free version.
It was a printing error or something like that. Like, if you get any other version of this beyond the DVD that I have, it has the gore back in it. But like, when it first came out on DVD and I was excited to grab my Tosk Adventure Part 2, I ended up with this gore-free one. Now, I did look up on YouTube, if you go on, like, there's that guy who does Carnage Count on YouTube that's just every single kill in a movie.
It's funny that you mention him, because he's coming back next week for my pick.
But I was like, I bet he probably has the unedited version, and like, there is some cool, gory deaths in the very beginning of this movie. The opening of this movie, I think, is the strongest part of the movie. If the movie was 20 minutes short, I'd be fine with it.
I'm actually really upset with you, Matt, because you have been gaslighting me for years, saying that the beginning of this movie is the beginning of the next movie. I was like, oh, yes. I have asked you so many times, is Toxic Avenger 2 the one where he rips the guy's ears off and then says, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? And then he squishes a guy like an accordion in a wheelchair, and you're like, no, that's the third one.
I didn't realize I was lying. I thought I was always saying part two.
All
Scott,
of that is
you realize
in part
my
four.
Brain is dumb.
Now, is part three the one that is like, or is part four the one that James Gunn did that's like incredibly offensive?
Part four is the one that James Gunn did that's incredibly offensive, and it has probably my favorite opening of any of the Toxic Avenger movies, because it's Stan Lee, like the Stan Lee, doing a voiceover talking about the Toxic Avenger, and he like gives the whole rundown of the first movie, and then literally in the narration he goes, and then there were two awful sequels that we won't speak about. Now, Citizen Toxie, the true sequel to the Toxic Avenger.
Oh,
like,
golly.
You gotta love when Lloyd is just like, yeah, I fucked up, moving on. So
yeah, and boy did he.
Yeah, well, this opening, though, I still stand by it. The opening is incredible. You've got these gory deaths if you have a good version of the movie. You have these hilarious edits of human to dummy that are just like the worst transition. Like it's like an actor, Toxie holds the actor for a split second, and then he's like literally just holding like a scarecrow on his shoulders and spinning it. And the whole thing, for no explainable reason, is scored by like a Casio keyboard cover of It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing.
Very strange.
It was so strange and so long.
Fucking long. And like,
it is so long. And we're not just saying the whole runtime of the movie. Really, truly, scene or set piece, like everything is longer than it needs to be each time, except for when Toxie is like with the Japanese youth, and I'm like, oh, fun, like, and then it's just like next scene.
Yeah, no,
and I'm like, wow, okay.
So the other thing that's funny about, because I agree with you, it is so long. So yesterday I watched this movie, but I also did a bunch of laundry, and I was like, you know what, I don't really need to have my laptop open for this first 20 minutes. I'll fold the laundry, because I knew that I had a solid 15 to 20 minutes to like get everything folded and get to my laptop before anything of importance happened in the movie. Like, like it is, and And you know what? Thinking of it like that, I understand how Lloyd made a 4.5 hour long movie, because boy, does he not think that anything was cut worthy in this
that
movie.
That does explain a lot. That explains a lot about this. I don't know. I mean, I love a lot of the kills in that first scene. I love the basketball. Like, the basketball is so fun. Like, that's the type of stuff that
But the thing is,
makes
the,
me ex-
I actually thought that the basketball... How are you saying...
I don't know, man. Of all the shit that happens in that intro scene, the basketball feels the most offensive, actually.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, I guess... Okay. I hear you.
I mean,
I hear you.
I feel like... so.
And I did... It wasn't a consideration, which is maybe offensive for me to say that. I wasn't considering that it was a microaggression.
Listen, we all have our missteps.
Well, mm-hmm. I think what it is that, like, trauma is a very weird category of movie. And in the strangest of ways, because it's kind of similar... To me, watching a trauma movie, especially watching this era of trauma, like right as we're about to enter the 90s period of trauma, it's kind of the same as watching like a John Waters movie from the 70s in the sense of like, this is, you're like, I am aware that the people who make this movie are extremely progressive humans, but I'm also aware that they are probably on the forefront of the shock comedy offensive forefront. So you're like walking this line where it's like, I don't even think as much as trauma continues to be a shocking film company, even into like 2024, I do think that there are jokes and moments in Toxic Avenger Part 2 that Lloyd would never dream of doing in 2024 that he felt way more like, ah, what the hell? Like, and I think that's with everything. Like, especially when you look at comedy, like, even the most progressive comedians of the 80s and 90s told some really fucked up, dated jokes that they wish they didn't tell in the 80s and 90s, because in a weird way, you don't think about, you know, a prime example. On the Weird Algorithm podcast, there is an episode of Al TV where Al goes to Japan, and like, Matt Milligan and I were both like, we were very nervous because it's 1980s American in Japan. And like, for all of the 80s into the 90s, basically it was just like easy punchline. Like, isn't Japan weird? Like that sushi? That's weird. Japan's weird. Like, that was like the whole butt of the joke. There wasn't any setup. There wasn't any established. And I don't know. I feel like this one walks that weird line where it like, both dabbles in the very hacky, like, Japan is weird part of it, but also simultaneously, I'm like, I don't know, I also feel like at the exact same time, Lloyd Kaufman actually really enjoys Japan. He feels like he's really trying to highlight stuff there.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, it feels like everything... I guess that the things that could ostensibly be in poor taste just really didn't bother me that much. Like,
they're not,
you know, like, exactly. Like, he makes soup with a guy. Like, he puts the cabbage and the ramen and everything in the hot tub, and he like boils the guy alive. That didn't seem so terrible to me. Like, a guy gets chopped up, like his dad, who's not really his dad, gets chopped up and turned into sashimi. Another guy with a fish head gets turned into sushi. Like,
yeah,
but that stuff doesn't bother me.
He turns a guy into soup, and this is where I feel like this is mildly progressive for the time period. Is like, he turns a guy into soup and he gets onto like a microphone and like does an announcement like the food is done.
Yeah.
But he does it in an American accent.
Yeah.
Which, like, I think anyone else in 1980 would have done like a Jerry Lewis in Breakfast at Tiffany's accent. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's like he actually is like, I don't want to mock this stuff. And case in point, the two main Japanese actors, so the girl that follows him around and Big Mac, when they casted them, they said that they spoke English. And then when he shot the movie, he's like, they don't speak English. Or like they do, but like.
It's very bad. Yeah.
It was very bad. So his wife and his business partner redubbed them.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like listening to them talk in the movie, knowing that, I'm like, they actually did a pretty good job of like not throwing on an outrageous accent, but like walking that fine line in a very like. I mean, like, here, I love these guys, but imagine if that same situation happened with Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
I knew exactly where you're going.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it would have been really rough.
And
like,
see, that's
real
the
rough.
Thing is that we have definitely waxed poetic about Trey Parker and Matt Stone before, and that's the point that I think that I've never been able to enumerate, is that they're kind of assholes about stuff. Like, their jokes really, they age like fucking milk. And and it's just so funny because Lloyd Kaufman is one of their idols, and he gets it. But it's just so funny when it gets filtered through a younger, edgelordier kind of mindset, because, like, even basketball, which I haven't watched in probably at least a decade, maybe 15 years at this point, I'm going to guess that there are a lot of inappropriate jokes that just don't hit anymore. At least this was my first watch of Toxie 2. And I will say that I was not enjoying myself because it's almost a 2-hour slapstick movie.
Oh, yeah. No one's. Oh, wait until you hear my double feature, because boy, does this remind me of a very specific franchise of film.
Okay,
but
well, all I'm trying to say is that I didn't enjoy my watch, but I didn't cringe once.
Yeah. No,
and that's a huge plus for Lloyd Kaufman. That's a feather in his cap.
There are things that I think the beginning is great as far as just you're getting just bombarded with crazy, creative, gory deaths. I also think that stuff like when it comes to the special effects, like they really didn't skimp as hard as they could have. Like the guy getting his nose crushed into a fish shape,
that was pretty
like
funny.
That prosthetic looks awesome. Like it's actually a really good prosthetic. I also think, and this is always the case with Lloyd Kaufman, there are jokes that are fucking awful, like awful. And a big one would be a line like, I'm Big Mac, but they also call me the Big Cheese. One could say I'm a Big Mac with cheese is a fucking terrible joke.
Awful. But, and it doesn't roll off the tongue at all.
No.
No.
But then Lloyd does, it's the moments that Lloyd does where you can see the, like, the John Waters influence for Lloyd Kaufman that shine for me, such as the people in Troma going, they're smoking crack. They're crack addicts.
No, it's crack addicts because they're toilets. That was the funniest joke in this movie. And I feel like what happened was Lloyd Kaufman literally went to a novelty store and saw little toilets and was like, how can I make that joke?
That's the first thing
that came to his mind. He was like, I'm just going to put it in my movie.
The other bit that makes me laugh so hard because it feels like such a good parody of these types of movies is Big Mac is transporting cocaine in fish.
Oh my God.
And the fish,
I did love
and the
too.
Fish falls on the ground and the girl samples the cocaine twice. And then it's like 10 or 15 more times that she samples it with her finger before she's like, it's cocaine.
I loved those two parts. That's the thing is that, and for people that aren't in the Patreon, Kyle's background is Toxie wearing a wig and glasses
and a camera
and he's got a camera and that's the inversion, that's the stupid American in Japan, and that's why the jokes are funny, is because it's kind of like the butt of the joke is America, not Japan.
I was going to say, back to the Weird Al thing, we were very pleasantly surprised because with Weird Al he did the same thing. It wasn't making fun of Japanese culture, it was making fun of a dumb American in Japan. So like in the narration he was like, I asked them to take me to an authentic Japanese restaurant, but they had all raw fish, so I went to the next best thing, a McDonald's. And it was like, Yankovic in a McDonald's. And it's like, that's great. Like, that's such a good joke.
There's a we're talking about this, and I just have a theory that all of this works and feels not edgelordy and whatever, because Lloyd Kaufman actually doesn't, even though everything is low budget and super cheap, I don't think he actually exploits workers. Like, I think that maybe like capitalistically he's not the best, he'll underpay people.
I don't know about that. I don't think all of the nudity is Japanese women.
But no, you know what? Here's the craziest thing that I had to write down. There is what appeared to be a gratuitous nude scene that somehow played into a character's death ultimately, and I'm like, well done. Wait, Lloyd.
Which scene is that?
When the one girl gets knocked unconscious, like gets hit in the head and her clothes fall off and she's wandering around nude.
Oh,
and
yes.
Then the guy cutting the meat is distracted by her being naked and doesn't realize he's chopping up. I was like, bravo.
I had to laugh. That's the same girl who, she's wearing a blonde merkin, right?
Yes, very
like,
much so.
I'm like,
yes.
Why is there a Japanese girl with a blonde merkin? It
budget.
Felt... Budget cuts, yes. Yeah, budget. That was definitely from Lloyd's personal collection.
Reused trauma stuff. Yeah. I want to clarify that I should have said that there's no exploitation. I just feel that Lloyd runs a set less exploitatively and with more respect, even though people are working for shit or not working at all, or maybe put in like... I think that he still gives a shit enough and is willing to figure it out, not necessarily at the expense of his employees.
Yes. I'm going to say something, and let me say that the news has recently shown us that this person is exactly the person we've always assumed he was. But a particular person who used to own a very famous wrestling organization.
No. Yeah, well, mm-hmm. You know, when you guys are like, oh, I don't hate wrestling, and I'm like, I fucking hate wrestling.
Yeah. No, you have one
up face
on...
now, yeah. Bitches.
No, because we all hate him anyway. But he has infamously said that he would never ask someone to do something that he wasn't willing to do in the ring.
Right.
And that was the reason why he was always willing to be thrown off the top of a cage, because if I'm going to ask one of my other employees to do it, I might as well do it as well. I think Lloyd takes that into filmmaking. If he's not going to ask someone to run around bare ass naked if he wasn't also willing to do it in his films. And I've seen Lloyd's ass in more than one movie.
Like, I thought you were going to say you've seen Lloyd's ass in real life, and I'm like, that doesn't shock me.
No, I wouldn't also get into that. But I know that he is extremely strict on, like, when he is doing those nude scenes, absolute closed set, only, like, essential. So it's like, if someone's going to do a nude scene, it's going to be the actor... maybe someone from HR to make sure everything like Troma has HR, but someone.
I nodded, but then I felt like a fucking idiot because I was like, Troma and HR in the same sentence.
You know,
Troma
but like HR. Someone to make sure everything's safe.
Michael Herz is just
and,
over
like,
there, fucking.
Yeah, but just like director, camera guy, lighting, and the actors, and no one else. Like, he's like, I don't want this person to feel more exposed in front of anyone else than they have to. Like,
just
I already
the entire
know it's
world that's going
to
be watching this movie for the next 50 years.
Yes, pretty much, yes. Mm-hmm. That is it.
Listen,
but even the same thing...
If I got paid to get naked in a movie, you bet your butt, and you bet my butt, that I would do it. If somebody wants to pay me to see me naked, I will do it.
Listen, I've brought up John Waters so many times in this episode, but I have to bring up my favorite John Waters story, which is in Pink Flamingos. There's the infamous guy who makes his butthole pop in and out to the beat of Surf and Bird, yeah. And that actor, until the day he died, whenever there was a screening in town of Pink Flamingos,
he showed
he would
his
go
asshole
to the screening.
Surf and Bird.
Well, he would go to the screening, find someone who is sitting alone, sit next to them, and when that scene came on, he'd go, "That's me up there."
Listen, I do draw the line at showing my butthole doing Surf and Bird, but I did realize I also have candy for today. It's this sour candy called Toxic Waste. I've been holding on to this for a long time. I don't remember when or why I bought it, but it's supposedly hazardously sour candy.
So it's like I'm a warhead times 10.
Please be careful.
I'm going to do...
We need you,
I'm
Scott.
I'm going to do lemon.
Oh, wow. You're really going for extra sour.
Well, but I fucking love lemon. I don't love black cherry. Grape.
Send me the rest then, because I want the grape
and
the black
cherry.
I'm going
to see you in like 2 months, bitch.
That's true. That's true. Bring that shit.
Oh, my God. Oh. It took two seconds. Damn, that is brutal.
All right. Good. I cannot wait. So I've only got a couple more notes that we have to talk about real quick. We were talking about how the opening scene was long and unnecessary. That was a walk in the park compared to the 20-minute car chase at the end of this movie that goes absolutely nowhere.
I wrote a note that said, it's not a trauma movie without an extended car chase. And this
car chase sucks
so bad. Where did they get a Toxic Avenger movie, I asked the same fucking question. Where do they get the money to blow up cars?
By not paying the actors.
They're all Buicks, but like...
When you don't pay your actors, it becomes real easy to find money for explosions.
True.
Okay, I'm sorry about the exploitation thing. Nobody's getting paid.
No, I'm sure they're getting paid. It's just
financial exploitation is way less terrible in my mind, but it's also because I'm not an actor.
Yeah.
Than like sexual exploitation, like grindhouse stuff.
Right.
You know, that's just me.
Yeah. But no, I get it.
Do you know?
feel the same way.
So this is one fairly famous person's first movie. Do you know who that person is?
Yes, I do.
Who is it?
It's Michael Jai White.
Yep. He was the stunt coordinator and one of the henchmen in this movie.
Was he the henchman with the nunchucks?
I believe so,
When I saw that guy, I was like, that fucker looks so familiar. And then I checked the Wikipedia. I was like, I'm pretty sure that was Michael Jai White.
And I have two other things that I need to quote in this movie. First of all, there's this whole thing where Melvin has to go to Japan to find his father, Big Mac Junko. And he finds him, and he's this evil dude, and he has to kill him. And then we get to the end of the movie, and his dad shows up, and it's a dude who makes way more sense to be Melvin's father. And he goes, you must have killed Big Mac Bunko. And his line is, he's ruined my credit score more than one time. I'm glad to hear of his demise. It's such a dumb line. But then the line of all lines, it's one of the last lines in the whole movie, is just someone screaming, big business sucks, you wad. And I said, a message we can all get behind.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm so sad that you are missing what I thought was the best line. And it's not a line as much as a line delivery. It's his therapist. And she's like, she's like grinding on him, telling him that he needs to go find his father in Japan. And he goes, in his like his thought process, which he's enunciating for the audience, his internal monologue is, on one hand, I'd have to leave Mom and Claire, but on the other hand, I get to see Dad. Oh no, I think he says it out loud because the therapist goes, Daddy.
There's a great psychology joke from going from Freudian psychoanalysis to Gestalt therapy, which I was like, and then she's just, as this voiceover is going, talking about her clinical orientation change, she's mounting him, and I'm just like, this is what it's like at home here with a psychologist.
So the last thing I want to call out very quickly, because I just think it's so funny in the world of like Lloyd Kaufman cost effective. There's this scene where, in case for some reason you were watching Toxic Avenger Part 2 and had never seen Toxic Avenger Part 1, we get one of the evil henchwomen giving exposition on the origins of Toxic Avenger.
Yeah.
I guess to save time finding scenes to assemble that, it's just a trailer. If you look up the trailer from 1985 for the Toxic Avenger, they're
incredible.
Literally just playing the trailer.
That's brilliant. That's also, that's good business. That's fantastic. Good for them. That's so smart. I'm mad at this movie for that, which was one of my three notes, was just, I'm mad at this movie. And now I'm just mad for different reasons.
Yeah. Hey, man, whatever.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
Hey, Matt, you've made at least one person, yourself, watch an hour and 48 minutes of Toxic Avenger. How are you going to continue your suffering?
I'm going to read exactly what I wrote down for my double feature. I don't know. Any Police Academy sequel? Let's say Mission Miami Beach.
Dude, that would be punishing.
Well, it's funny you say that because, Scott, this is coming out on February 22nd. And on March 1st, the Geekscape TV YouTube channel is relaunching. And one of the first four segments we are going to be doing throughout the month of March is myself and Robert Bacon have rewatched all seven Police Academy movies in order to rank them from worst to best.
Wow.
So that came with a little plug. I'm plugging. Yeah, I'm plugging. All right. So how about you guys? What would you guys use to save the night?
I'm not saving it. It's not being saved. We've actually already said it, but I would really like to pair this with Sergeant Kabuki Man. I think it's just it to me. It's not necessarily about how good the night is, but it's like it feels like a learning experience, a time capsule, and an event, a moment.
Sergeant Kabuki Man is a wild. I think
I've actually never seen it.
Okay, so here's the thing.
You've talked about it multiple times. You've never watched it.
I only know of the character in where it lands in like trauma's history. Sergeant Kabuki Man.
So Sergeant Kabuki Man, I don't think would ever classify for horror movie night because it is straight up a superhero send off. It is doing Batman. Yeah. It is a fascinating movie to watch because it is R. It's an R-rated movie, but it was the only time Lloyd Kaufman attempted to shoot a PG-13 movie. So it is like super fucking tame. But they still couldn't get the PG-13 rating, but that was like the deal. Like they were like, we want you to make a PG-13 superhero movie. Like we want you to make the Toxic Avenger, but for kids. And like, that's what he made.
And somehow Toxic Crusaders worked, but Sergeant Kabuki Man.
Well, if you buy the Sergeant Kabuki Man DVD, like somebody has, one of the bonus features is the opening credits that they had made for a potential Sergeant Kabuki Man cartoon series if the movie was a hit. Like, they were ready to make this character and market the shit out of him. And
it's crazy because I cannot even imagine a world in which that was the case.
Yeah. And
you know, but think about the intro, the first 20 minutes of Toxie 2, and kind of there's even a line where the one woman is like, even comic book villains like us go to Japan when we want things done right. And it really fits into, like, the reason that I was even, so I didn't even get into this when we were talking about the actual episode, but that intro scene fucked me up as a kid because I saw it on cable at somebody's house and I was like so traumatized because it is still incredibly gory and it's gross.
Mm-hmm. Traumatized.
I mean, it's trauma gross. But I was interested because the Toxic Crusaders cartoon
was a cartoon. Yeah, that you watched.
Was something that I watched, and I was like, "Oh, this must be what it was based on." I was like, "Holy shit!" You know.
Yep.
So I can see them being like, "Yeah, the Toxic Crusaders cartoon worked just fine. There was a Swamp Thing cartoon and the toys, and there are Toxic Avenger or Toxic Crusaders toys. Let's fucking do another." That's why they wanted Sergeant Kabuki Man.
And this is the one other quick Sergeant Kabuki Man fact before we go to Scott's double feature. That is the film where you get the infamous car flip that they are still using almost 30 years later. Because, again, people thought that this might be like the marketable trauma movie. So they got a bigger budget than they normally would get. So he got to do this crazy car flip. And then he's like, well, I think he said it was like a $100,000 stunt. And he's like, well, I'm getting every dollar of that $100,000 because we're just going to keep using it in every movie.
That's an insane amount of money.
I bet you if he upscaled it too now, like he would still be able to use it even better placed in.
I think it's funnier that he doesn't. I think it's funnier that every time the film stock drops greatly, the car color doesn't match anymore. like the lazier that they've gotten and leaned into that joke, the funnier the joke has become. But
that's also
Scott,
a very John
you?
Waters kind of thing. Going to say I'm going with a kind of gross superhero type character as well. I'm going Hellboy. I really love the first Hellboy movie. I mean, I like Hellboy 2, but Hellboy itself has everything that's awesome. It's even got a Cthulhu. Or it's got some sort of, you know, eldritch cosmic horror in it. I think that would really save my night, but it'd also be a really long night. I think they're both almost 2 hours long.
Yeah, no, that's a lot of time there. Well, guys, what's going on? We got a couple things happening here. First off, we are getting closer and closer to Creature Feature Weekend on April 19th to the 21st. I do have confirmation that we are almost definitely going to be doing something on the night of the 19th.
Yeah, because we're gonna be too full of Doritos on the 20th, guys. Sorry.
Exactly.
God bless. God bless.
Don't forget to check out our Patreon. Join our Slack channel, if nothing else. That's a $1 donation gets you into that Slack channel. Patreon.com/HMN podcast. Hit up our website, HMNpodcast.com. Get yourself a t-shirt, all that cool stuff. Hit us up on all of our socials. HMN Podcast is basically where you'll find us everywhere. And also, like, I've got another podcast that I'm doing now called YAOK. The first episode came out last week. It's two of my friends talking about YA novels. So check that out. Now, Scott, I wasn't able to save the night with my double feature, but let me tell you what I've been watching this week, because this will save anybody's night. I had to take it slow. I had to do 1 to 2 episodes a day because I was literally dehydrating myself with how hard I was crying watching the 8th season of Queer Eye, which also appears to be the last season with Bobby Burke, who will be leaving the show. Queer Eye, like the first 2 seasons of Queer Eye, I thought were masterfully done. Every season since has been like pretty good. This was definitely like, there were like 3 or 4 episodes that I'm like, oh, these are like all-timer emotional roller coaster episodes of Queer Eye in season 8. So definitely recommend. If nothing else, check out, I think it's episode 6, which should have been the last episode. Like you know how like you want the last episode to be the most emotionally
tearjerker, absolutely
tearjerker one, and that was episode 6. Episode 6 was about a guy who is deaf who works at a school for the deaf as the coach of their football team, and they're finally getting to play their first game in over 3 years of practicing to go on the fields, and like it's just like every element of that episode I'm just like crying, so much so that kind of ruined episodes 7 and 8 because I was like, I don't feel anything now.
You're empty. Megan watched that episode last night without me, thank goodness.
Oh my god, I literally, my girlfriend came by to hang out and that episode was just ending and she was like, is everything okay? Because I was just, I literally had to get a bottle of water because I cried so much that I definitely like dehydrated myself a little bit. So that's a glutton
for punishment.
Oh yeah, but that's my recommendation. So you know, whichever one of you,
porn.
Come on, dive in.
That's what we call it.
Kyle,
I watched Destroy All Neighbors on Shudder.
I did too.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Are you going to talk about that today?
I can.
Or wait. No, I'm just glad you've seen it. So now that I don't have to.
Well,
spoil
so we've
it,
all seen
man,
it.
I mean,
so if you have not watched it, this is our spoilery discussion of it, and therefore, sorry, don't listen to this.
Sorry, so figure it out, everyone.
Yeah,
this
is the end of the episode for you. We're gonna spoil it.
And also check out my interview with the director after you watch it.
Yes.
Please check out the interview, and that's part of what I mean. There's a few things that got me in the door, right? I love Man. I didn't realize that Honus was actually in there as what's something Bang Jensen?
Bang Jensen.
Oh my god.
Oh, he's got a full name.
Caleb Bang Jensen. Yes. Which you have to say his entire name.
Yes.
There are a lot of A lot of fun characters, a lot of fun gags. I mean, it's Gabe Bartolus, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but he had done, I believe, all the Basket Case stuff. Like, he's been working in this weirdo effects world for a long time. So, like, and that comes, like, shining through. A lot of music jokes that if you like them land, if you don't, they don't take away from anything that's happening. Like, it was all very accessible for like niche
for topics nerds
and approaches. Yeah. Yeah. It was very, I thought it was a lot of fun, and it has some heart to it too. I think a lot of it is maybe white boy problems, but at the same time, I thought it was done in a way that didn't feel like, you know, it's done in a silly horror way, so to me, like, or a horror comedy way, so to me it didn't take away from it. And there's some, it just delves into chaos, and it's very fun, very very fun.
I had a good time watching it. My only critique is that I actually thought that Alex Winter's character's accent was so awful.
Yeah,
I know it's the point, but yeah. Like, that was, it really took me out. And I also felt like I was watching the American version of Todd and the Book of Pure Evil, because it really hits, yes, a lot of the same beats.
It does.
And so for me, for someone who loves that show so much and has watched a lot, this didn't feel as fresh, but it did feel familiar, which I really appreciated. Does that make sense? I hope that doesn't sound too harsh.
No, it doesn't sound harsh at all, because like, it's also, that's a thing that isn't happening often. Like, that type of storytelling or that type of
film. I could watch gory music movies anytime.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a small genre, so I actually think that it's a compliment more than it is something that takes away.
I think that's one of my favorite lines from the director Josh when I interviewed him, was like, he's like, I keep hearing people refer to my movie as a throwback, but like, I never stopped watching these type of movies, so I didn't even know it really went away.
Right. I didn't know. I'm glad that we're talking about it as all three of us instead of just me, because I feel like I wouldn't have been able to enumerate what I liked and what I just didn't. I wasn't like head over heels about it, but that's exactly it. It's because it felt familiar, which, I mean, it's like a warm blanket. I love that, you know?
Yes, right.
I also thought that a lot of the jokes hit, but Alex Winter just really took me out of it, because he just chews every scene, and I love Alex Winter, but I just couldn't handle that character.
I
get that.
My favorite element, and you know, just assuming that some people are like, fuck you can't tell me what to do, I'm still gonna listen. All I'm gonna say is, Eleanor steals the show for me. When Eleanor shows up, I'm just like, this is so good. I just thought it was fun. I do love, like you said, you got Thomas Lennon up in there a couple times just being outrageous. John Daly basically playing like a Les Claypool-esque guy with his bass YouTube channel. Like, it's I think it's cool because it clearly loves Prague while also making fun of people who love Prague. Like, it walks
you
that
have
very
to love,
loving
you have
line.
To love the music that you make fun of. That's why Todd in the Book of Pure Evil is so good, because it's very obvious. And Metalocalypse.
Metalocalypse.
Brendan Small loves death metal. He loves all sorts of extreme metal. And so those jokes hit. I felt like Deathgasm, I mean, and I could be wrong, but it just felt like they were trying to make a movie making fun of black and death metal without quite understanding the nuance of it. And therefore, it felt to me, a person who has been steeped in a lot of extreme metal for a long time, it felt like they didn't get why you couldn't make certain jokes, you know. And then also, it was like, it was too broad of an audience, but also not broad enough. Does that make sense? Like, it's
I think the
jokes
only
are very like, oh, metal is stupid, and then they kind of mix genres in the wrong way. What was that movie that where they the metalhead guitarist, it was a Netflix movie that came out last year, he like teaches his metal lords And that was actually a quite touching coming
of
age.
I was trying to think of if I could fuck up and make
even
a title.
Worse one.
That wasn't those. Sorry.
Yeah, no, but it. Metal Lords is also coming from a place of love. You know, like I just feel like if you know these genres, you can grasp that they are, or even if you're just in subgenres of music, you can get when the jokes are being made on your own behalf, like self-effacing, and that makes the joke okay.
I think the only, and this is coming from someone who has absolutely no real passion for the movie one way or the other. Mm. I feel like the only argument that could maybe be made with Deathgasm, and I have not watched this movie in over 10 years, so I can't say.
And I'm sure that you made this reference when we, I think you're
going
to make
the same
argument.
No, I might not have. I just thought of this actually now. But like the argument that could be made is that it's not making fun of black metal and death metal, but making fun of kids who don't understand it. Jumping in blindly to it because it is like two high schoolers, but I feel like Metal Lords handles that balance way better regardless. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because when you're a teenager, I feel like that's one of those tropes as someone who's, again, I'm doing a YA podcast, so I've been reading a lot of YA novels. There is this thing that happens with almost every single YA novel that I read where they introduce a character that annoys me to no end. And it's not until maybe the last 50 pages that I'm like, oh, this is very intentional. Like mm-hmm. I'm reading it being like, this author is so good except for this one character and I don't get it. And then I get to the end and I'm like, oh, this character is, like, I'm sitting there being like, this character seems like such a gatekeeper to like what is or isn't queer. And then it's like, oh, no, that's intentional because when you're a teenager just coming out, you don't really know the nuances of it. So everything's black or white. Or like when you have a character who's like a punk rocker and they're so obnoxious about punk and it's like, yes, that is how every middle school to early high schooler is when they discover punk for the first time. Like it is this delicate line that you have to kind of find a way to walk. And, you know, if you do it right, the audience watching is like both – loving it because they relate to it and cringing because they see too much of themselves in it at that age, you know, and like I think that that's the exact balance you want to have where you're like,
that's interesting.
Ooh, I remember when I was exactly like this when I first discovered that genre of music, like, okay, that's got it. Well, I think we can all agree
no that's all that's I wanted to talk about Destroy Our Neighbors.
I think we can all agree that if we were to recommend one movie for you to watch, it wouldn't be Toxic Avenger 2, but it would probably be Destroy All Neighbors. So check that out, and we'll be back with another film that's mostly worth watching just for the kills. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.